Welcome to the debauchery.
In 1986, a seance conducted by two young girls in an attempt to reach their recently deceased mother opens what is believed to be a doorway to another realm. But it's much more sinister than anyone could have imagined. A doorway that led to mystery, misery, and murder. I'm Dave Jari.
I'm Garrett Quarter.
And this is Criminal as Fuck. What's good, criminals, debauched, and all you fuckers out there, and welcome to another episode of Criminal AF. You know who this is. I'm Dave Jari, and with me, as always, is the co-host with the most, Garrett Quarter.
How we doing?
Let's all give a huge Criminal AF shout-out to Sharice Webb for becoming our newest member of the debauched, as well as to our great friend and partner, Debbie, from True Crime University for upgrading her membership.
Whoa!
Yes, thank you all so much for being part of our fucked-up family. Also, a shout out goes out to all of our new free members. Thank you all so much for joining on. Before we jump into all the fun today, we just need to go over some things regarding Criminal AF. We're a comedic, informative, true crime-ish podcast, meaning we'll talk about some true crime like Florida Man or our main story. We'll also be talking about some other things not related to true crime like mail call or, but whatever we talk about, we'll be having some fun doing it. Sometimes we find that certain aspects of these stories are particularly funny, and sometimes we like to call out people for being a shit stain on society and stealing our air.
You're pretty much ish out of all those.
Yeah, that's
true crime, comedic laugh, like, it's ish.
Yeah.
It's just ish.
This is your first time joining us. You're about to experience two guys who have ADHD and also fucking swear a lot. So who knows where these conversations will take us. With that being said, we do discuss some pretty horrific and tragic stories that involve murder.
Yay!
Rape.
Oh, fuck.
Torture.
Ugh.
And we will not shy away from the most gruesome of details, regardless of how disgusting they may be. Now, we understand that Criminal AF is not for everyone, and that's okay. We just ask that you at least give it a listen. And if it's not for you, hey, thanks for checking it out.
See ya.
But if it is, welcome to the debauchery. So today we'll be going over some mail call questions that our listeners have sent in. And of course, Garrett will be telling us a heartfelt and inspiring story of some random Florida person.
Actually, we got two today.
We got two.
Yeah, there's one that I just have to throw in there. It's not very informative, but it'll make you say what?
Yeah, a little Florida bonus.
Yeah.
And we'll jump into a mind fuck of a case with a plot twist that'll creep you the fuck out. While we hopefully have your attention, head on over to criminalasfuck.com for all of your Criminal AF needs. Check out our episodes, videos, reviews, send us messages for mail call and dear douchebags, as well as join our Patreon. Also, while you're visiting Criminal AF, go check out our merch.
Go get you some merch.
Yes, sir. We're adding new styles and designs all the time, so dig deep into your voyeuristic selves and go stalk our shop.
Your voyeuristic selves.
Who knows?
If you like to watch.
Yeah, if you like to watch, you know, go check it out. You can also go visit our friends over at welcometothedebauchery.com, where you can find ourselves, Fright Flick, FMK, and True Crime University. Finally, if there's one thing that makes our knees weak and our hearts flutter, it's that you go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Good Pods and leave us a 5-star rating, a positive review, and click the share button.
Go. Go now.
That's a little subliminal message. Seriously, though, we need those reviews to help drive us up charts and to let the world know that Criminal AF is the
number one true crime podcast in the world.
Mail call.
Oh, I forgot about the floor. the pig calling.
Yep. Welcome to Mail Call, where you send in your questions and we answer them. Can be any question you want. True crime question, serious question, random question, situational question, would you rathers. Everything is fair game for mail call. How do you get your question in? Just go to criminalasfuck.com, go to the send it in tab. There you will find our mail call link, as well as our dear douchebag links to send us in a situation that's plaguing you at the moment. And you want our advice based on years of bad choices and multiple marriages. Well, for me anyway. Also, while you're on the mail call page, if you would rather send in a voice question, just click on the red microphone and record your question. So first up, we have Stu Muertos. And this is more of a hands-on question.
I like it.
And they want to know, have you ever tried a peanut butter, jelly, and mayonnaise sandwich?
Fucking disgusting. Mayo is the grossest shit in the world for me.
He says, I've been eating this since I was a child, and it's awesome.
What?
I have yet to find anyone who will try it, let alone like it. Well, Stu Muertos, you've come to the right place, as I just so happen to have a peanut butter jelly and mayonnaise sandwich here.
Dave gets to my house and is like, hey, do you have peanut butter jelly and mayo? I'm like, yeah. I was like, what are you going to do with that?
All right, so let's give it a roll. So, Stu,
I can't even watch you eat that shit.
He says that you're going to have three slices of bread. So the peanut butter and jelly goes on like as a regular sandwich. And then you put the mayonnaise on top and then put another slice of bread on top. So here it is here. I'm going to give it a little shot.
Yeah, chew in the mic. Get a good. Knowing that's peanut butter, jelly, mayo, and fucking.
Bro.
First off, there's a couple things wrong with this. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you can't have three pieces of bread. It's all about the consistency. It's about the layers.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like putting too much cheese on a pizza.
Well, when you add a layer of mayonnaise, you got to add another layer of bread.
Add the layer of mayo. I just don't get that. Like, why?
All right.
That's so interesting to me.
Here's my result. You're not going to have a bite?
No. I'm not even a fan of peanut butter and jelly, let alone mayo peanut butter and jelly.
All right. Final analysis. It's not bad.
Yeah. Sure.
It sounds gross.
You're trying to help him out by saying, yeah, buddy, you're not weird.
You get the potentness of the peanut butter. You get the sweetness of the jelly,
and the cum shot texture of
and the jizz
mayo.
And the jizz texture of the mayo. Yeah, who doesn't like that? I mean, come on. Anya's probably gonna eat the rest of it. All right. Actually, yeah, it wasn't that bad. So there you go, Stu Muertos. Now you have another fan.
Yeah, but you didn't love it.
I mean, it's not something I'm going to go
out. This guy gets excited when he gets home from lunch and he's like, I'm going to make a fucking peanut butter and jelly.
Mayonnaise.
Stu Muertos.
Yeah, Stu Muertos. So thank you very much.
You have interesting taste buds, buddy.
Yeah, not bad. Everybody should at least try it just once. All right, so thank you very much, Stu Muertos. And next we have our friend Kate Goanna with another voice question from Australia.
We'll see.
Is there anything that people do in traffic that just makes you want to go postal? For me, if I let somebody in traffic and they don't give me the thank you wave or the acknowledgement, I want to actually pursue them and hunt them down until they do.
Wow.
It drives
God, damn.
Me
okay.
insane for some
she,
reason.
She sounds like she belongs really, in America.
Really sticks in my craw. Anyway, guys, keep doing what you're doing. You are absolutely hilarious. I'm out on the road a lot during the day and I love listening to you guys. So have a wonderful day. Ciao.
Wow, look at Kate.
Sticks in my crawl?
Sticks in her craw.
Sticks in a craw.
She's got a little deep.
No, she sounds very American in that statement. Because I feel like road rage is a...
It's a common...
We get shootouts at over road rage here.
Yeah, I like that. I like seeing the little devious side of Kate. That was pretty interesting.
I want to hunt them down. Skin alive.
I would say that driving is probably one of the only places where I get really fucking disgruntled. Like, I'm a pretty laid-back dude, like, most of the time. But being on the highway, as Kate would say, really sticks in my craw.
Sticks in my craw. Think highway's the worst?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's around town for me.
Yeah, sometimes around town, yeah. But I would say my biggest pet peeve is when people have to merge into one lane because there's like an accident or construction going on.
Yeah, and then they just fly by.
And they're just like, and the drivers are just passing everybody trying to squeeze into the line at the last possible second. Like, you're the fucking reason why traffic is so fucked up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, you're creating this whole clusterfuck by creating a congestion at the point of the merge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you should have got over a mile ago.
Yeah, there's like signs that are like a mile and a half back saying, hey, left lane or right lane is closed ahead. Like, just fucking move the fuck over so we can all just fucking go through. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that fucking hit. Like, now that I'm older and I get more ornery.
Got all them teeth. No toothbrush.
Got all them teeth and no toothbrush.
All right, keep going.
I'm like losing fucks by the day. Like, I really don't give a fuck anymore. So what I'll do now is that whenever there's a merge and I see fucking dickheads like trying to pass to get up ahead, I'll actually move over and like take up both lanes.
You're going to block them? Oh, yeah. Man.
You know what I mean? And like, I'll take up both lanes so nobody can go by. And then somebody else will be like, hey, he's got a pretty good idea, and then they'll like go over and like take up half the breakdown lane, so they can't get on. So now we're just cluster fucking the whole fucking thing. Like, go fuck yourself.
You're like burn the whole fucking bridge down. Yeah. If I can't
fuck
cross
you.
Right.
That's it.
For me, it's always what pisses me off, and it's always a truck for some reason. It's always a truck when you're just trying to go, and he knows that like you're trying to get by him, and you take that slow turn off of it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
when
yeah.
you're just driving, and then that guy will just sit there and take 6 hours to turn, and like you'll see him looking at you the whole time.
Yeah.
I fucking hate. You know what I'm saying? When they slow down to a basic standstill, and you can literally just take the left.
Yep.
And they just slow roll it. I get as close as I can to that back quarter panel.
Yeah.
And I just. I want to drive my car right into the back of them. Yeah. I hate that shit. It's always a truck too. Yeah. They think they
own the road.
I hate it. That's really it. I'm really good at letting people in. I'm a very like passive driver. I always let somebody go ahead of me. I always
see there's a rule to the road. So like if you're like at a concert or a football game and stuff, you know, and you're like trying to get into traffic, it's like one, then the other. You know what I mean? You take turns, get into the line, whatever. Like I'm all about that. But if I see the second person trying to cut in, I will fucking smash into their fucking car. I don't give a fuck.
This is what I'm telling you guys. If there are ever bodies found around Norwich, Connecticut, just know that your podcast host has elevated to another level.
There is nothing that pisses me off than uncourteous drivers. You know what I mean? Like kind of like you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're all here. There's like rule. There's unwritten rules. Yeah. Right? Let's follow them.
Abide by them, right?
But I will say this, though. All my friends, if I ever drive up to New York, my wife, my friends, my family, they always designate me to drive through New York City.
Yes.
You have to. Like, I turn into a New Yorker when I do. Like, that's a different level. Like, anybody who's never been to New York.
You have to adapt.
If you've been there and just taken cabs, like, you're just visiting.
Yeah.
If you actually drive those streets, man, you got to yell, scream, beep.
Land the horn.
You got to cut people off. Yeah. That's just how it is.
You got to do it.
It's actually kind of fun.
Yeah, it's like a demolition derby.
Yeah, it's
got to fucking yeah, see,
that tests you as a real driver right there. Get as close as you can on someone's back end.
Just fucking ride their ass. Literally. All right, thank you very much, Kate. Next, we have a question from I Am Serious and Don't Call Me Shirley. What quote is that from?
I was trying to remember. I saw that in the show notes.
Yeah,
and I was trying. I was like, it sounds so familiar, but I didn't know where it was from.
Surely it can't be serious.
Oh, I am airplane. Serious. Airplane. That's I see. I knew it.
Surely it can't be serious.
Oh my god.
I am serious. Don't call me Shirley.
I don't know if I can tell this on the podcast, but I was very impaired one night with my buddies.
What?
Your guess is who? But I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
And I was watching Airplane, and I'm telling you, I've never laughed. So I've seen it a million times. Over here, but first, like it was. The fun, like it, that to that day, that was probably the fun, the most I've ever laughed at a movie.
Yeah.
It's just a classic.
It's a classic.
It's such a classic. And it's so dry that it's.
I know.
I don't speak jive. I do.
All right. So their question is, I posted this on Instagram and Patreon the other day. Question is, if someone handed you a book about your life right now, from birth to death, would you read it to the end? Now, you can't change anything in the book. Like the book, this is your life. This is what has happened, is currently happening, and will happen. You can't change any of it. Would you read it?
I get to see how it ends?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. No, I'm good.
You're not reading it?
No.
Yeah.
Up to that point, sure, I'll read it. I'll relive the... I don't even know, though. I can't even re-listen to a podcast episode. Mm. Without cringing.
Without cringing.
Yeah.
Like, I did that.
Yeah. I just. I don't know. Maybe I can't do it.
Yeah.
Can I pick? Is it chapter by chapter? Like age by age? I might pick out the highlight films. I might relive the highlights.
The cliff notes.
Yep. And then. I don't want to. I don't want to know how it ends.
Yeah. Basically, it's like, do you want to know how you're going to die? Basically, that's what it is. I mean, because you've already.
Well, not even just that.
You've already.
I might live under a fucking bridge. You know what I mean? I might lose everything. You never know. I don't want to. I'd rather have it surprise.
Yeah, that's true.
I might live in a fucking trailer home with pantheons, with pantheon columns.
See, like my whole thing is like I wouldn't want to know how I die or when or whatever. Like I said, you can't change it. Like it's written. It's the way it's going to be. The thing that I would refuse to want to know about is what happens to my family, my kids, my. Like if I read like a couple chapters ahead and it's like, oh, this happens to your kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would fuck you
up. It's like, what the fuck? Nope. I don't want to know anything. Nope.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody would want to do that. But if it was, all right, here we go though. if that book was in front of you on your coffee table every day and it never like left, it had to stay on your coffee table, it would be very hard not to. It'd be like, you know what I mean? The red button. It would be like the red button that says do not press right in the middle of your coffee table. Because you know, especially if you're like, no, I don't want to, I don't want to. And then you'd be sitting there watching TV looking like, oh, fuck, I'll just read one chapter. I'll just read And then you'll just keep going. You'll keep going. And then all of a sudden you'll realize, wait, there's no more chapters.
There's no more chapters. What the fuck happened? Yeah. Or you read up to like present day.
Yeah.
And there's only like three pages left.
Oh, no. You're like, this book should be a lot bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not reading it. Nope, I don't want to know anything.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Right. No way.
So great question, Don't Call Me Shirley. Next we have Lucy, and she wants to know.
Don't call me Shirley, that's funny.
Would you rather...
We have to bring him to the hospital. Yeah. What is it? It's a big brick building. With.
That's funny. All right, so Lucy asks, would you rather be faced with a tiger shark or a saltwater crocodile?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm going tiger shark.
I would much rather face a tiger shark.
I've seen too many like National Geographic videos of them like redacting them with their hands.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Give them a little tap and they're just like, okay.
But a saltwater croc, you're not fucking redirecting. No. Yeah. No. Even though then again, you also see a lot of crocodiles are fucking dumb. They're dumb as shit. You can literally just step over them, and they'll be like, ugh. And they'll be like, they look like an old person trying to eat. Yeah. Like, they're missing their fucking kid with the spoon. They do, though. They're dumb. People are like, oh, saltwater crocs are hilarious. You see some of those guys, they slap them in the face and shit. They just snap. They don't... I feel like one saltwater croc is not that scary. If you have if you're swimming through a river of them, then you're fucked. But like one.
Well, I'm saying this. All saltwater, freshwater, whatever, crocodiles, alligators.
Well, yeah.
They can all fuck off to hell. Because they got that death spin shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Once they lock
and they fucking twist you around and rip your fucking legs off and shit. Mm-hmm. And then if you got two crocodiles and they each have like a fucking limb and they're both doing the twist thing.
Dude,
it fucking sucks.
And then they'll just bring your body underwater and store you under a rock for later.
Right.
They'll eat you underwater. Yeah.
So, but we are scientific here at Criminal AF and I looked up some stats.
Oh, okay.
So up until 2021.
Crocs for sure.
There have been 131 attacks and 34 deaths ever recorded
for tiger sharks.
Tiger shark.
Yeah.
So 34 human deaths in the history of ever recording tiger shark attacks. Okay. Now let's check on saltwater.
I guarantee you it's in the thousands.
Now, in the defense of the saltwater crocodiles, it doesn't separate between saltwater and freshwater. But the number of human fatalities is, let me check my notes here, 1,000 per year.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, fuck that.
1,000 per year?
Yes, of human deaths by crocodiles.
There you go.
And not only that, they fucking eat each other also.
Oh, yeah. How many times I've seen videos of, like, trainers or whatever at, like, zoos throw in a chicken, and then one of them, like, they both snap.
Yeah.
One of them grabs the other alligator and then starts death rolling, rips off that alligator's ear.
Yeah.
Or arm. Arm, sorry.
Yeah.
Yep. It's crazy.
Yep.
It's nuts.
Yeah, like tiger sharks usually the only attack if you provoke them or if you piss them off somehow. Or now crocodiles will fucking hunt you down and murder you on purpose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think also, too, is Jaws put a fear in people. I think it was such a prolific film at the time that it just created shark culture, like shark hate and shark being scared
fear,
of sharks.
Yeah.
When really, if you look at the stats across the board, you're more likely to die by like almost any other animal.
A spider bite.
Yeah, than sharks.
Mm. I don't know if that's true. But, well,
spider bites definitely probably.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Lucy. I will 100% swim with a tiger shark.
Yeah.
And for the last mail call question, we have Debbie from True Crime University, and she asks, if you could visit any crime scene before anyone fucked with it, what would it be? Now, Debbie's, she said hers would be the Villisca Axe Murderers, the Idaho 4, or the Delphi Murders. Ooh. Those are all good ones.
Those are all
good ones. I think I know what yours would be.
Well, you already know, but I'm not going to say it because it's easy.
What is it?
It's Dahmer, dude.
Dahmer?
I want to go in the apartment, but...
Oh, I thought it's somebody different.
No. Who were you going to say?
Sharon Tate house.
Oh, fuck. That'd be a good one.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
But... I'd be in the pool. I'd be hanging out when the cops got there. I know. I feel like the apartment is so iconic.
Yeah.
I also, the Amityville Horror murders too would be cool. Just because I don't know. I love that house. I want to see the boat shed. I want to I was always interested in that story. I don't know if I want to see dead children though. There's something about that apartment though, Dahmer's apartment, like the random shitty fish tank next to a couple fucking weird. Like it's such a bachelor's part. It makes me laugh when I see pictures of that. Like who lives like that? there's like no a blinds on
chair.
A random metal chair, and then a shitty couch that he got off of Amazon. Or Amazon, it's not Amazon.
Probably picked it up off the street.
Yeah, he picked it up off the street. One wooden dresser, just full of fucking body parts in his face.
Yeah, I was thinking
no headboard for sure.
Yeah,
just a mattress on a
on a
box spring
slab. I was gonna say like the Wonderland murders, although there is video of the crime scene with the victims still present on YouTube.
Yeah.
You can see that video whatever. So then I was thinking that I'll go with the Gainesville Ripper murders, where he went in and over a 2 or 3 day period, he murdered five college kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he positioned the body. He cut one girl's head off.
Yeah, but you just want to watch. You just want to see. You just want to see what the bodies look like all positioned.
Yeah. So basically,
I'm just saying, why?
You're just going to walk. You're the first one on the scene, basically.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So yeah, because he positioned this one girl with her on the bed with her ass up in the air, I guess with her head on top of her fucking ass or some shit. Mm. You know what I mean? Like positioned her all weird. Another one he had something over on the fucking bookcase. Fucking wild.
If I could think about it, I'd come up with some better answer. But my first reaction is the Dahmer's apartment.
Dahmer's apartment. I wouldn't mind the Tate one also.
Yeah, Sharon Tate. That would be cool.
Or the LaBianca one. Yeah. So yeah, I'm gonna go with the Gainesville Ripper murders. So thank you very much, Debbie, and that'll wrap it up for Mail Call.
Criminal AF will be back after this quick break.
Do you like scary movies? If your answer is yes, then you need to check out my show, Fright Flick FMK. My name is Jay, and along with my co-host, Gentleman Jack, I watch and discuss horror movies and tell you what I think about them, new or old, mainstream or underground. No horror flick is safe from my warped opinion. So go check out Fright Flick FMK now. We are on all major podcast platforms and YouTube. Also, be sure to follow the show on all major social media sites. But be warned, we are not your mama's podcast, and this promo will be the longest amount of time you'll hear me talk without swearing or cracking an offensive joke. Now go grab your favorite drink, pull up a chair, and give us a listen.
Now back to Criminal AF.
All right, Dave.
Yes.
Let's go to Florida.
Yeehaw.
What in the fuck is going on in Florida?
All right, we have two Florida men today because I just saw this and
I'm going to get one more bite of this peanut butter and
chili. You actually eat it? Oh, you like it.
I'm fucking hungry.
Ugh.
All right, go ahead.
Florida woman arrested. Oh, it's actually a Florida woman today. Sorry. Florida woman arrested after gun found in child's lunchbox at daycare. It's so Florida.
Mom, can you pack me a Lunchable?
Yeah. Pack me my High Point. Riviera Beach, Florida. A South Florida woman is facing charges after a gun was found inside a child's lunchbox.
Jesus.
By a daycare teacher. Shayna Davis, 39, was arrested on charges of child neglect and allowing a minor to obtain a firearm to take to school, according to an arrest affidavit.
Affidavit.
On March 14th, the daycare teacher called Riviera Beach police after finding a gun in a child's lunchbox. The teacher told police she was opening up the child's lunchbox and screamed, "Gun!" She saw the firearm inside of it, the affidavit stated. Another teacher's response to help and pick up the gun with gloves to determine if it was real, which it was, and they called police. No one was hurt. When Davis arrived, she told law enforcement that she normally leaves the gun in her car's glove box, but lately had been taking the weapon out of the car because of the multiple break-ins at her apartment complex.
So,
so So you throw it in your kid. She said on that morning, while she was getting the child ready for school, she placed a gun inside the lunchbox because she did not carry a purse.
What?
Oh, my God.
What? There's no way.
And did not want the gun to be visible. Davis told police she forgot to take the gun out of the lunchbox. There is no way.
How the fuck did that even happen?
Though the owner of the school did not want to press charges, Davis was taken into custody and booked. I hope so. What the fuck you mean not press charges into the bail? Like that's an immediate DCF call, everything.
But the principal was like, nah, it's fine.
I get it. It's Florida,
it happens.
It's Florida.
Jesus Christ.
Davis was taken into custody and booked into the Palm Beach County Jail. Jesus.
Fucking wild. Oh, here's your fucking crustables, your carrot sticks.
The crazy part,
fucking Glock.
The crazy part is that could have ended so bad.
Oh, bad. Yeah.
Like,
if the teacher didn't catch it,
it's daycare, so you know they're young. If they don't, if they just like send them to their like little circle, like eat at lunch, and nobody caught it, and that kid picks that fucking thing up.
Oh, it's fucking.
Whoa, that's scary shit, dude. Yeah, that's like, that's serious.
Yeah.
What a dumb ass person.
All right, what's the other one?
All right, the other one's good. Man masturbating while riding child's bicycle in Walmart parking lot arrested.
No.
The crackhead on the Barbie bike strikes again.
Oh my God.
We've talked about this on the podcast about crackheads riding little kid bikes, dude. They're unstoppable. A man caught masturbating on a child's bicycle in a Walmart parking lot was arrested and charged with indecent exposure. On March 21st, the Margate Police Department received an indecent exposure call from the Walmart parking lot located at 5501 West Atlantic Boulevard. Upon arrival, officers spoke with the victim, a homeless woman, who was in her vehicle at the time. That's horrible. The woman reported a man, later identified as Mondell Ellis, 37, of North Lauderdale, was masturbating while on a child's bicycle near her truck. I want to question, how are you jerking off?
Yeah.
While you're riding a bike, that's some crazy. Like,
I can just see it, like, kind of like
doing loops.
Just hovering around like a shark around the car, just fucking stroking his fucking meat, staring at the lady in the car,
fucking high as a kite,
just swarming around her fucking car,
like a shark,
rubbing his fucking dick out.
Oh man! Based on the description given by the victim, police quickly located and confronted Ellis. Officers were able to have the victim positively identified, Ellis, as the man she saw masturbating outside her truck. Ellis was arrested and transported to the Broward County Main Jail, where he was being held on $2,500 bond. Wow. I just thought that was so funny.
Excuse me, ma'am. Is this the man that was masturbating on the bike? Sir, whip your dick out, please.
No, there's no way you don't see that guy. Like, no, that you could spot him in a lineup for sure.
Start masturbating, please, sir.
You know, he probably...
Yes, that's him.
He probably had one of those raggy coats on, and he's just, woo-hoo! I think of Reno 911 when I hear that. Yeah. The kid on the roller skates.
Yeah.
Nick Swartzen plays the dude on the... Woo! Woo!
Just fucking going to town.
Oh, that's a funny sight.
Oh, my
God.
I'm
telling you, it just adds to the lore of crackheads on Barbie bikes.
Yep. Ding-a-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding.
Ring-a-ding-ding-ding. What's in the water in Florida?
All right, let's get right into this story here. Back in 1986, two sisters who decided to have a seance to conjure up their dead mother's spirit thought they actually succeeded. But what happened is a lot more sinister than what they expected. So pack up your lunchbox. Don't forget your Glock, because it's time to fuck this episode in the mouth. All right, so in 1986, sisters Tina and Karen Bowen, aged 15 and 9, had recently lost their mother to cancer. In a desperate attempt to feel a connection with their late mother, the girls decided to have a seance in their basement. They didn't expect anything to come of it, but what if? The girls conducted the seance, and as expected, nothing happened. Later that evening, the girls began hearing rhythmic knocking on their bedroom wall. In the middle of the night, the two girls began speaking to these strange knocking sounds, and shockingly, the knocks appeared to be in response to the questions the girls were asking. And each question they asked, the knock seemed to have the correct answer. Perhaps the seance did work. This went on for several nights in a row. It appeared that the girls had their mother back, albeit from another realm. The knocks began to become more frequent. Even if the girls weren't asking any questions, it came to the point where they would be woken up from a deep sleep. Night after night, unprovoked, the knocks would keep the girls awake. A few weeks later, objects throughout the house began to disappear. Furniture would be moved from one spot in the house to another. And sometimes, irons would be strewn across the floor.
I'm not going to lie. This would start scaring the shit out of me.
Fuck yeah.
It would start scaring.
If none of this shit happened prior to this fucking seance you did,
yeah.
And then everything started happening, fuck, I'd be shitting my fucking pants. So both Tina and Karen now believe that their seance didn't conjure the spirit of their beloved mother, but that of a malevolent spirit.
Brought something else.
Dun, dun, dun. The girls spoke with their father, Frank Bowen, and explained the seance, the knocking, and the items going missing and being moved around without reason. Of course, Frank didn't believe a word that they had told him. He was rather confident that the girls, in an attempt to deal with their mother's death, made up the entire story. And they, in fact, were the ones who were creating the mischief throughout the house.
I would have to believe that, too, as their father.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rough time. Mm-hmm. Kids are going through the loss of their mom. They're making stuff up.
Yep. So in January of 1987, the knocking once again began while Tina and Karen were home alone. This time, while they were in the living room of the home. But rather than coming from the walls, the knocks were coming from the basement. The girls, armed with a kitchen knife, made their way down the stairs. There, they made a shocking discovery. Written on the wall in a red substance were the words, "I'm in your bedroom. Come and find me."
Fucking terrifying.
Tina and Karen screamed and they ran as fast as they could from their house to that of their neighbor, where they called their father at work and told him to come home right away. Frank came home immediately and, still believing that this was the work of his daughters, decided enough was enough. Tina and Karen were sent to counseling to help them come to terms with the loss of their mother.
And let's give a credit to the dad for actually putting their kids in therapy.
Yeah.
They clearly, when he thought they needed it.
Right.
I always, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Several weeks had passed and the girls were home alone again. Out of the blue, they heard the knocking noises once again, this time coming from Tina's room. Behind the wall. The girls entered the bedroom, and written on the wall in a red substance was, "I'm back. Find me if you can."
Oh, fuck that.
So the girls again ran screaming to their neighbor's house and called their father, explaining everything that had just occurred. Frank again raced home and berated the girls. Enough is enough. Frank was determined to get to the bottom of this. Either the girls are playing these tricks to get attention, or they really did summon their mother from beyond the grave. What else could it be, right?
Yeah.
So Frank stormed into the house and was taken aback. The house was in shambles. The girls didn't say this when they explained what happened. Frank cautiously made his way through the house while the girls and the neighbor stayed downstairs. Frank entered Tina's room, and in a fresh inscription on the wall were the words, "Marry me." Suddenly, Frank is startled when he hears a noise coming from the closet. He quickly turns around and sees a person standing in Tina's closet dressed in his dead wife's clothes.
Whoa, that's fucking terrifying.
The person charged Frank, wielding a hatchet, and a struggle ensued. In the commotion, the person broke free and managed to disappear into thin air. Frank stumbled out of the bedroom and raced down the stairs. He grabbed the girls, and they and the neighbor ran out of the house to call the police. The police arrived and moved in to clear the house. The inscriptions on the walls they discovered were written in ketchup. When they investigated further, they noticed that a false wall was built into Tina's closet. They opened this wall, and inside, still dressed in her dead mother's clothes, was a boy, a 15-year-old named Daniel LaPlante.
What a fucking lunatic. Yeah. I'm not going to lie, though. That's a good touch to dress as the dead mom. Yeah. And listen, you got to give credit
where it's
due. That's
like some psycho.
That's what I mean. You got to give credit where it's due to really, like, he went above and beyond to traumatize those girls if they found him.
So LaPlante was immediately arrested and taken into custody. Police continued to search the rest of the home. It was learned that LaPlante would enter the home when it was vacant and made the access through Tina's closet. There were peepholes in each of the rooms throughout the house, and LaPlante even constructed access to other areas of the home so he could easily make it from the bedroom to the basement through the walls without notice.
He was like a fucking little rat.
Yep. And it was learned that LaPlante was actually living in these walls for weeks.
Jesus. Talk about taking stalking to another level.
Dude.
So. What's crazy is he never actually tried to make contact at that point. Like, clearly the guy is psychotic. He was living, like, I think he enjoyed the scaring. Like, right. that was his thing. Because any other stalker would have already tried to either kill them or take them captive or whatever.
Right. He's playing the long game.
Yeah, the long game is an understatement. You're building tunnels in this person's house.
So, how did we get to this point, and who the fuck is Daniel LaPlante?
Criminal AF will be back after this quick break.
So you like to listen to people talk about crime, but did you ever wonder why criminals do the things they do? Like what makes them tick? My name is Debbie, and I'm the professor at True Crime University. Join me in the classroom Thursdays, wherever you get your podcasts, for intellectual discussions about crime, psychology, and why criminals do what they do. See you there.
Now back to Criminal AF.
So Daniel LaPlante was born in Townsend, Massachusetts back in 1970. From what I've read, he suffered a horrible and traumatic childhood, but there isn't much to go on as far as documented examples, as he was a minor and a lot of information is sealed. But for all intents and purposes, it is said to be worse than most people can imagine. It's known that LaPlante suffered extreme sexual and physical abuse from a number of adults involved in his young life. His biological father is said to be the worst of them all, abusing him sexually, emotionally, and physically on a daily basis. This abuse would continue after his parents separated, and his new stepfather would allegedly sexually abuse him as well.
Wow, his mom really picks him.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Yep. She's like, I see you got a decent job. You drive a nice car. Do you fuck little boys? Oh, okay, yeah. You can move in. He was diagnosed with dyslexia and hyperactivity disorder, and he fell behind in school at a young age, both academically and socially, and was picked on relentlessly by his classmates. Things only became worse when LaPlante entered high school at North Middlesex High School. He was the weird kid, the creepy kid, and he was bullied incessantly. LaPlante's mental and emotional state rapidly declined as a result of the extreme abuse, both in the home and at school. School officials decided that LaPlante would be best served if he began seeing a psychiatrist, and his mother agreed. It's a good idea, right?
The one good decision she probably made.
Nope. Because this would make an already bad situation for LaPlante even worse. The psychiatrist, who was entrusted to help him, soon began sexually abusing him as well.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Another male figure in his tormented life taking advantage of a seriously disturbed young man.
You couldn't get away from one of these guys?
No.
Every day? Know.
I don't know. But you fucking psychiatrist is... Ugh. Wow. So as can be expected, by the time LaPlante turned 15, he was already well-versed in criminal activity, often breaking into people's homes. He would steal items from these homes. Sometimes he would just rearrange things, and other times he'd leave behind items he stole from other houses. Eventually, he just broke into these homes for no personal gain other than to just fuck with people, which led him to 15-year-old Tina Bowen. Now, it's unclear how his obsession with Tina began, whether he saw her in school or if he saw a picture on a wall when he broke into her house, but the obsession was pretty immediate.
I would say.
Yeah. Now, it's believed that LaPlante allegedly acquired her phone number during one of his many break-ins and began calling her. At first, LaPlante introduced himself to Tina, saying that he had gotten her phone number from a mutual friend who went to the same school. LaPlante described himself as athletic, handsome, well-educated,
oh, man.
Blonde hair, you know, just a boy next door, you know, whatever.
A Disney prince?
Yeah, pretty much. And over time, Tina Bowen became smitten with the mysterious Danny, who she spoke to almost nightly. Eventually, Danny asked Tina if she would like to go on a date, and she agreed. On the night of the date, Danny shows up and knocks on a door. When Tina opens the door to greet him, she was shocked to discover that Danny was not blonde, or athletic, or even fucking good looking.
You would think that, like, if you were going to go on a date, you would just be like, all right, I've been lying.
Yeah, here's the truth.
This guy just, showed up like, hey. Yeah.
Shows up on the front porch and he's disheveled, he's dirty, his clothes are all fucking disgusting, he's got greasy dark hair. Now, most girls would freak the fuck out and slam the door in his face, if only for the sole reason that he lied. But Tina was different. She was kind and she didn't want to hurt his feelings, so she reluctantly agreed to go on a date to the local fair. The conversation quickly turned strange after Tina divulged to LaPlante that her mother recently died. Suddenly, LaPlante's shy demeanor quickly vanished. He began asking Tina multiple questions about her mother's death. What did she die from? Did she die quick or did she suffer? On and on with rapid-fire questions about Tina's mother's death. After about an hour or so, Tina made the excuse to end the date and she left, with every intention of never seeing or speaking to LaPlante ever again. LaPlante, obviously, as we already spoke about, had other ideas. He was present inside the walls of Tina's house when she and her sister decided to hold the seance, and the rest is history.
Oh, he must have loved that.
Oh, yeah. Now, after LaPlante's arrest for breaking into the Bowens house, he was charged with 4 counts of kidnapping.
Really?
4 counts of armed assault in a dwelling, breaking and entering, larceny of more than $100, and malicious destruction of property. He was placed in a juvenile detention facility where he stayed until October of 1987.
I wonder why the kidnapping charges.
Because he intended to kidnap him?
But intent is not.
I don't know. That's what I just found on the...
That's just interesting to me. I was just seeing if you think you kind of put it together. You know, they throw random charges and stuff like that.
Yeah, just see if it sticks.
See, but that's interesting. I didn't think kidnapping would be...
Well, they had it for the father, the 2 girls, and the neighbor, because they were all in the house at the time he attacked. Mm. So maybe. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's
weird.
All our legal friends out there.
Yeah.
Comment. Send it in. I'm curious. Why did he get kidnapped?
Yeah. All right. So he was placed in a juvenile detention facility where he stayed until October of 1987, when his case was transferred from juvenile court to adult court, which now made him eligible for a bond. It's believed his mother bailed him out, but he was scheduled to return for another hearing on December 11th, 1987. But we will soon learn that LaPlante had other plans. Upon his release in October, LaPlante immediately reverted back to breaking into people's homes.
Lance, I'll tell you right now, as a judge, like listening to the story and like recounting, there's clearly something wrong with this fucking boy.
Right.
He needs to be in psychiatric help.
Yep.
Something like that.
Yep.
That is a long, like you said, it's the long game for sure.
Oh, yeah.
A normal person doesn't. There's definitely like some scary behavior there.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. He's definitely got some deep, deep, deep fucking shit going on. In November, LaPlante broke into his neighbor's house and stole 2 handguns and ammunition. On December 1st, I wonder if he put them in his lunchbox. Carried around in his fucking A-team.
My Little Pony.
On December 1st, 1987, this story takes an even darker and more twisted turn. During the day of December 1st, LaPlante broke into a home less than a mile from his house. Inside the home was 33-year-old Priscilla Gustafson, a preschool teacher who was also pregnant, and her 2 children, 7-year-old Abigail and 5-year-old William. Priscilla's husband, Andrew, was at work at the time. When he returned later that day, Andrew's entire life was turned upside down. He entered his home, as he did every other day, greeted by his children racing up to him to give him a hug and a kiss. But today, the house was eerily quiet.
It's just eerie to me, because right around the same age as my kids, my wife.
That's how you walk in the door.
Ooh,
imagine walking in the door and there's nothing.
Nothing. That would completely red flag right off the rip.
Yep.
Oh, that's sad. I just feel for the husband.
Yep. So Andrew calls throughout the house, but there is no answer from Priscilla or the kids. Concerned, he begins going from room to room in search of his family. Inside their bedroom, Andrew discovers Priscilla, face down on their bed, pillows and bedding soaked in blood, naked from the waist down. Andrew immediately calls police. It was discovered soon after what had happened to the children. 5-year-old William was found in the upstairs bathroom tub, floating in water. 7-year-old Abigail was found in a similar state in the downstairs bathroom tub. He had drowned both kids. So how did LaPlante so quickly turn into a petty thief?
Oh. Yeah, that's huge. Like, that's a huge escalation there.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it about that? Was it the defenselessness of?
Well, from what they're saying, like, is all he was up until this point was a petty thief. He fucked with people. He just moved shit around, blah, blah, blah. And now he's going in and now he's a rapist and a murderer, right?
Yeah.
So it's believed that LaPlante, he always had that viciousness inside of him, but he was like either too weak, too scrawny. He didn't have the confidence, whatever, to pull it off. Until he got a hold of his neighbor's guns. Now he had something to be like, yeah, what now, motherfucker?
Yeah, you know, kind of thing. You gonna run?
Right. So now he had the power to control people. And he'd been eyeing this particular house for some time. And he knew what time Andrew left for work and when he would return. making a pregnant Priscilla, alone with her two young children, an easy target. But if there was one thing that LaPlante wasn't, it would be that he wasn't smart. He's a fucking idiot.
I mean, depends how you look at it, too.
I mean, he was kind of smart to burrow through somebody's fucking
house.
That's
what I mean. Yeah. To live unnoticed in someone's house for a week. It's just a different type of smart.
Right. But he flubbed a lot of things here. So police quickly surmised that it was he who broke into the house and committed the murders. He had a history of breaking into neighbors' houses, and he was just recently released for the incident with the Bowen family. So he was added to a very short list of suspects. Police went to track down LaPlante at his home, but he had fled. A search was conducted of his home, and police found a pair of sneakers that matched the tread found in the garden of the Gustafson home. A sock with saliva and blood was found.
Oh, this guy just kept everything.
Yeah, believed to have been tied around Priscilla's mouth. A cordless phone that was taken from the Gustafson home, and a .22 caliber casing, which matched two casings found near Priscilla's body, amongst numerous other items.
So he did. He raped and shot the mom.
Yes. He raped her, shot her multiple times in the back of the head, and then drowned the children. His trail was picked up after LaPlante had broken into another home and kidnapped a woman and stole her car. The woman luckily escaped and called the police. After another witness called saying that they saw LaPlante, he was finally found less than 48 hours later, hiding in a dumpster. When he was taken into custody, his clothing was processed and police found strands of hair on his socks that were eventually linked to 7-year-old Abigail. On December 4th, 1987, LaPlante pleaded not guilty for 3 counts of first-degree murder, and his trial began in October of 1988.
3 counts? There was a baby in there, too.
Yeah, back in the 80s, I don't think they counted babies as...
That's a good law that they added then, because that should have been 4 counts.
Mm-hmm. LaPlante was ordered to undergo a psychological examination, and he was deemed fit to stand trial, as he acknowledged and understood the charges against him and the ramifications of the charges. Even though he was still a minor at the time of the murders, he would be tried as an adult. There were over 50 witnesses called during the trial, and LaPlante did himself no favors by smiling, laughing, and showing absolutely no remorse whatsoever during witness and expert testimony. Even when they were talking about how the murders were committed, he was just sitting there like fucking thriving.
If you look at the pictures of him in court, he doesn't look like, looks eerily similar to the Parkland shooter.
Yeah.
The same demeanor that he had.
Yep. So his defense attorneys, they try to garner some sympathy from the jurors by painting a picture of LaPlante's childhood, filled with physical, emotional, and sexual abuse by his biological father, his stepfather, and psychiatrist. And, you know, as we say many times in the show, we feel bad for the child version of these shit stains.
Yeah.
But that all goes out the window when they willingly and knowingly go on to abuse and murder others.
Especially drowned a 5- and 7-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, you got to have... Like, you think, does it make you feel tough?
Yeah.
I don't get that. I mean, clearly I'm not a fucking sadistic murderer, so...
Yeah.
I just don't understand how someone...
Can do that.
Could do that.
Your childhood was so fucked up, but you're going to turn around and you're going to fucking kill a child.
It's not a chase either. It's not a thrill to kill a 5- and 7-year-old, right. Especially drown them in a tub. You're not. I mean, maybe for him, he thinks he's like you said. It's a.
Well, they were restrained. They were restrained too. The kids, they're all restrained.
Yeah.
Hands tied behind their back. Fucking ankles tied. All of them.
But I was saying, like you said, with the gun. You know, a gun made him feel big.
Right.
And he felt like I don't know. Maybe that was. Maybe he was bullied his whole life and he felt like a fucking loser. I don't know. It's crazy to me.
Yeah. So the case finally went to the jury and they came back 5 hours later saying that Daniel LaPlante, you can go fist yourself for the rest of your fucking useless, miserable life.
Good.
Guilty on all counts. 3 consecutive life sentences with the possibility of parole after 45 years.
What?
Yeah.
There's no way he got possibility of parole.
Yeah. Yep. 45 years. He's not going to get it, but he got 45.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, as we all know, that with any murder conviction, the cum stain gets fucking appeals. So in 1993, he appealed that the search warrant of his home was unconstitutional and should not have been granted. And as we know, this is where the majority of the evidence against him was found. And if granted, all of the evidence would be ruled inadmissible. So the appeal court said, hey, Daniel LaPlante, you can keep fisting yourself in fucking prison.
Good for them.
Yeah. So, well, the plant wasn't satisfied with just fisting himself, so he had other needs in prison. Damn it, I have other needs than just fisting myself.
Well, crime against children, he was probably getting fisted by someone else, not just himself.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
It says here that LaPlante, he felt that his life was in danger.
Yeah.
So he requested to be transferred and placed in confinement. This was granted. But then he turns around and sues the prison system because he was denied access to the library, which you don't get to go to the library when you're in solitary confinement.
Yeah, this guy thinks he's a mastermind. He's
Well, they awarded him $450 for his inconvenience. Can't go to the library. Here's $450. Add it to your commissary.
Funny. Yeah, as people would probably pay, like, oh, good, here, I'll pay his fine for him. Yeah. Fuck him. Fuck him. I would do it. Oh, I'm so sorry, buddy. Here's $450 for your fucking soap shoes and your whatever you buy. Your ramen. Fuck you.
Yep. So then he sued again when porn he received in the mail was confiscated. Now, porn is considered contraband, you fucking idiot. Of course it's going to get confiscated.
Who the fuck is sending him porn?
I don't know.
There's probably some fucking sick weirdos.
There's some people out there that fucking send nude photos and shit.
Even though I think some of our fans would probably do that. Some of the listeners of Criminal AF are definitely sending some nudies to
to fucking LaPlante.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, so the prison system said, you know what? You don't get the porn. Sorry, go fix yourself. Now, in 2013, he sued again for what he claimed was refusal to properly exercise his faith. He suddenly became a Wiccan, and he was denied access to dragon's blood, black opium, and honeysuckle.
Oh, he's so annoying. He's like that dude who's... I don't even know. I know that type of person. Just try it. Just tries to weasel. He's just a weasel. He's trying to weasel his way out of everything. Mm-hmm. How do you act like a prima donna in fucking... when you have three lifetime sentences?
Now, apparently, I didn't realize this about the Wiccan religion, but apparently carrot cake is also vital to practicing Wiccan because that was part of his list that he was denied access to. Dragon's blood, black opium, honeysuckle, and carrot cake.
That's interesting. I don't know the rules of Wiccan, the Wiccan religion.
I think he just threw in carrot cake because he wanted a fucking slice of carrot cake.
Yeah. Give me some black opium and some carrot cake.
Yeah.
He's the type that, like, please, just send his... if he keeps whining and crying, put him in Gem Pop, dude, because he won't fucking last.
No,
man.
Nope.
All those poor guys who missed their wives and kids would fuck that dude up.
They're like, come here.
Yeah.
Come on over here. Hold my pocket. So basically the prison system, they said, denied. You know, go fuck yourself. Now in 2017, LaPlante, now 46 years old, filed an appeal for a reduced sentence after the Supreme Court ruled that people who commit violent crimes as juveniles cannot be sentenced to life in prison without parole. At this point, he had been in prison for 30 years, and he was a changed man.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Now, with this change, this would automatically make LaPlante eligible for parole right off the bat. In his appeal, LaPlante made a statement. I do not have the words to fully express my profound sorrow, but I am truly sorry for the harm that I have caused. From the very essence of who I am, from the depths of my soul, I am so sorry. But his words weren't as heartfelt as I just read them. He was disassociated from these words that were coming out of his stupid fucking mouth. So basically he was just like, hey, I'm sorry. You know, fucking shit happened.
Yeah, he wrote it down and it sounded nice written down. Yeah, but
it was like 30 years ago. Get over it.
The real person came out when he tried to say it.
Yeah. Now, the judge, seeing right through this soulless demon in front of her, said, Mr. LaPlante, I hear you like fisting yourself, and you can continue to go do so. Your sentence stands. Three life sentences. He will still be eligible for parole in the year 2032, but, I mean, let's be serious. He'll never get out. There's no rehabilitation for this dude.
No.
All right, what do you think, Gary? What do you think of this story?
That was great. I love this story.
It's a short one.
It's a short one, but it's got a little bit of everything.
Got a little bit of everything.
Seances.
A little paranormal.
Little rats hiding in walls. Yeah. It's such a good story.
Yeah. I think it touches everything. It's got everything we say we talk about. It's got murder. It's got rape. It's got torture. It's got all the things. All wrapped up in a little fucking shell.
Let's hope, though. 2032. Let's hope the judge makes another good decision. Let's that motherfucker rot.
I mean, let's be honest. Hopefully he's fucking dead by then.
Yeah. That's true.
All right, so that'll do it for Mystery, Misery, and Murder by Criminal AF. Thank you all for hanging out with us. Before we go, if you found what you heard interesting, please, please, please go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave us a review or comment on the episode.
Swipe right on us, please.
Yes, there are only...
I'm desperate.
There are only a few things that we beg for, and this is one of them. Please leave us a review.
Make us feel pretty.
I want to feel pretty. Now, don't forget, head on over to criminalasfuck.com for all of your Criminal AF needs, socials, Patreon, merch store, submit your mail call questions, you name it, it's there. Signing off from Studio Chloroform in the living room version. Keep your head on a swivel and stay safe till next time.
Now give me our theme music. See ya.
Executive producers for this episode are Christine Rivera, Beth Davis, Dusty J. Hicks, and Terry Burb Wallen. Associate producers are Paul Hodge, Tara Mazur, Chantel Daggett, Jay from Flight Flick FMK, Cherise Webb, Corey Cribbs, and Donnie Blake. Producers are JD, Trent Gobble, Devin Dean, Ashley O'Connor, Lisa Perello, Alicia Knight, Maria Sleen, Chris Owen, Justin Ware, Emily Knight, Emily Dickendasher, Ian Turner, Dom Cachito, Debbie from True Crime University, and Renee Prada. Intro and outro music by David Mercurio. Be sure to follow Criminal AF on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, X, and YouTube. Check out all of our merch and many other items at debauchedesigns.com.